On the agenda today, we have four bills on the agenda today. In order to accommodate schedules, I'm going to do a work session on House Bill 2613 and then take public testimony on 2377 from our elected officials. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2613A and ask Lori to please explain the bill and the Dash 7 amendment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2613A in gross allows a landlord to assess a utility or service charge for water if the landlord provides the water from the source owned or operated by the landlord. Prohibits the landlord from charging tenants more for utilities or services than utilities or service providers charge the landlord. It declares an emergency. It's effective on passage. The Dash 7 amendments, you heard this actually on April 30th, and the stakeholders indicated that an amendment was necessary. That is the Dash 7 amendment, and it actually deletes the new provision that was in the bill as they engross related to the water charge and restores current statutory provisions. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and conflict says it's good to go.
Thank you. Mr. Vice Chair?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2613 engrossed, dated May 7th, 09.
Senator George moves to adopt the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2613. Is there any discussion? Any objection? The Dash 7 amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2613A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moves House Bill 2613A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Ann, will you please call the roll?
Senator Burdick?
Excuse me.
Senator Girard?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2613A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Senator Rosenbaum, I see your name on this bill. Would you be our carrier, please?
Sure.
Thank you. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2613 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2377A and ask Lori to please do a summary for the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2377A engrossed requires the use of a hands-free accessory to use mobile communications device while operating a motor vehicle. It expands the list of exceptions to include public safety and emergency personnel, persons using the device in the scope of employment, and persons using the device allowing for one-way voice communication. It designates the offense as a Class D traffic violation punishable by a maximum fine of $90. There's a Dash 12 amendment before you that creates an exception for a person with a Federal Communications Commission license operating an amateur radio, and also it creates an exception for two-way radio device operators. There's no revenue impact and no minimal fiscal impact, excuse me.
Thank you, Lori. Representative Esquivel, I'm going to have Senator Morissette join you.
Oh, look out.
Good bill. How you doing?
Good. Welcome. Who's on first? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6, Medford. You have in front of you a bill that actually started quite some time ago with myself and Representative McPherson. We tried this a couple of sessions ago. We're unsuccessful with it, but I think now's the time to go ahead and proceed with this. What this bill does, it prohibits anyone under the age of 18 from using a cell phone, period. That's real important because we don't allow these youngsters that are new at driving to have someone else of their same age in the car with them. So I guess the question we ask ourselves, why would we allow them to talk to them on the phone, which is more distracting than if they were in the car. The next thing that it does is this bill does prohibit people from using a cell phone. You can turn a system on and off, but you cannot use a cell phone itself. What the problem we have is a couple things. One is when you use a cell phone, it has been proven, and I believe you have that statistic, young lady, that you're the equivalent of a drunk driver. You make that many mistakes. Now, if you're honest with yourself and you've used the cell phone, you know you've made mistakes. I know I have. I'm a realtor, and I've just been very lucky. I've either weaved, gone off the road, slowed down, speeded up. And when you weave, you slow down and speed up, what do you sound like? That sounds like the MO for a drunk driver, and that's exactly what it does. The other thing, if you have an opportunity, just take your hand, put it up here, and try to see traffic to your side. It's near impossible. You have a blind spot. Or you can do it on the other side, and it's the same way. I have observed a couple of accidents here in the last couple of years, and every time I saw those two accidents, there was a cell phone involved. The driver that had made the error, committed the accident, and initiated it, was using a cell phone. This has been aired out pretty much through a committee we had, a work group. We had all interested parties at the time come in. We have amended this to where it will take care of the Nextel. We have amended this so it takes care of the ham radio operators, but I see they're trying to get an exception, but they are, in fact, accepted in this bill, providing that they are in an emergency situation. So that's fair enough. So it's a pretty simple bill in the aspect that it prohibits texting, and texting is probably the worst of all causes of accidents. Right now, you can drive at 70 miles an hour and text legally. Well, of course, I can't do it sitting at this desk, but some of these people can. But it's very distracting, and of course, you're going to hear, I've heard the argument, well, what about people that are eating? Okay, what about people that are eating? I have yet to see somebody stick a hamburger up at their ear. So that isn't real valid to me. You don't look at a hamburger, you don't look at it, and you don't text it, you don't get pick numbers out of it. It's a very distracting thing, a cell phone. I know because I use them. This makes you use a hands-free device. Now, hands-free devices today, devices can, in fact, mine, you press a button on the side, you never take your eyes off the road, but you press a button on the earpiece, and you can actually call people. You put their name, you pronounce their name, a computer will come back and ask you and verify whether that's the person you want to call. You turn it on, and you turn your cell phone off by touching your ear. That's pretty simplistic compared to holding one at your ear, trying to dial a number, and texting. We have statistics, I believe. Unfortunately, Representative Tomei is out ill today.
She is.
Yes, and it's too bad. She's my partner in this situation. And she has done a yeoman's job in getting information. I believe that her staff is here to give you even more information. California, Washington have both adopted similar programs. But I think that it's time for us to go ahead and initiate this and start saving people from being hurt. I asked the state police, what are the statistics of people that get involved in car accidents that are using a cell phone? And the response is, we're not real sure. We think it's about such and such. And the reason being, no one admits that they were using a cell phone when they hit someone else, which that makes sense. What were you doing? Oh, I don't know. I just hit them. Well, okay. But how many people are going to admit, well, I was talking on my cell phone, I wasn't paying attention, and I rammed them. So, anyway, without further ado, I'll turn this over to Senator.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And Representative, are you able to stay for this panel?
Yes.
Because if not, I'll have questions now. You're able to stay for the panel, then we'll hear from you. Thank you.
Actually, I'm in land use, but I don't think it's that barnstorming of a deal.
Chair Bonamici and members of the committee, my name is Sarah Alsbrooks. I'm a legislative assistant to Representative Carolyn Tomei, and I'll be presenting her testimony as she's out ill today. I want to thank you for the opportunity and for giving me the chance to talk to you about the dangerous habit of driving while talking on a cell phone. House Bill 2377 prohibits motorists from using a handheld mobile communication device while driving. This includes both talking on the phone and text messaging. Hands-free devices would still be permitted. The offense is treated as a Class D traffic violation with a maximum fine of $90. We started this discussion last session, and since then I continue to hear from citizens about the hazards posed by drivers talking on cell phones. One of my constituents was traveling in California and sent the following email. I didn't think California's ban on them would have much of an effect, but it most certainly does, especially in the heavy traffic of Sacramento, where we are now. I have never seen so many drivers with both hands on the wheel. And because of that, drivers are much more attentive, and I haven't had one car weave into my lane. The ban has taken a lot of the anxiety out of driving here. Additionally, a retired corrections officer from Wolf Creek contacted me saying, there have been numerous times that I have observed people driving carelessly out of their lane of traffic. Most of the time when we pass the vehicle, the driver is blabbing away on his cell phone. I even saw a semi-truck swerving on the freeway and the driver was on his cell phone. Anyone who is against your bill, I would ask them, how many Oregonians have to be killed or injured before something is done about this issue? Feel free to quote me. I did just that. Additionally, we have a woman here today, Peggy Tucker from Canby. I heard about her devastating personal story while reading the Portland Tribune. She's kindly agreed to come and share her story with us today. Several states, including California, Connecticut, New York, and Washington, banned the use of handheld cell phones behind the wheel. 17 states, including Oregon, banned the use of cell phone use by novice drivers. In some states, it's treated as a secondary offense, meaning that officers can only enforce the measure if a driver is pulled over for another traffic offense. Our bill treats operating a handheld cell phone as a primary offense. If you're talking and driving with the cell phone at your ear, that's a traffic violation and you can be fined $90. We include several exemptions to the cell phone ban: to summon medical or emergency help, to a person operating an ambulance or emergency vehicle, to a person using a mobile communication device during agricultural or farming operations, and to people participating in training, public safety, and emergency service activities, both as a professional or a volunteer. We have worked closely with stakeholders to provide the appropriate exemptions while making sure not to dilute the original intention of this bill. What I want to emphasize here is safety. 80% of the 270 million cell phone users in the United States talk while driving. 19% of motorists text message while driving. There are 2,600 fatalities and 330,000 injuries sustained each year in the United States from the use of cell phones while driving. The National Safety Council says there is no dispute that driving while talking on your cell phone or texting while driving is dangerous. I would also encourage you to refer to the fact sheet I have provided that gives additional information about the dangers associated with driving while talking on a handheld cell phone. The time has come for Oregon to join its neighboring states and outlaw this dangerous practice. Thank you to the members of the committee for hearing House Bill 2377, and I look forward to working with you to craft a workable solution to this problem.
Thank you, Sarah. Senator Morsai?
I would prefer to testify with some of the ham operators, please, if that's okay.
Absolutely. That's fine. So are there questions for Representative Esquivel or for Sarah? Senator George.
Thank you, Representative. On your agriculture exemption, what's the criteria? If you're driving in your pickup truck, you can use your cell phone if you're working on your agriculture operation?
Madam Chair, Senator George, I don't believe that's the case. I believe the case is if you're driving your equipment, then you can. If you're in the process of doing agricultural, then you can. This isn't a situation of where we have an officer stop someone that if you are, in fact, using a cell phone. The burden of proof will not be on the officer to prove that you were or you weren't. The burden of proof will be on the individual that's using the cell phone to justify why they are in front of a judge. That's where we're shifting the responsibility. If you're cited, because I can say I'm a farmer and get away with that all the time, doesn't necessarily mean that I'm doing agricultural at the time. So it'd have to be related directly to that job. Now, if you're on a tractor, no one's going to say a word. The other thing that was brought up in a hearing was, what about hunting? Okay, what about hunting? First of all, you shouldn't be on a road when you're hunting. And second of all, you shouldn't be using a cell phone at all when you're going after game. The reason this thing was brought forward was, in my district, was there was a bicyclist that a youngster under 18 was talking on a phone, ran over that individual, and that individual today will never be what they should be. Did that answer you, Senator?
Question, Senator Gerard?
Yeah, thank you. The question I have is the timber industry on one-lane roads commonly uses either radios or cell phones to say, look, I'm coming up, you're coming down, so that they can coordinate where to be on the road when they're doing their logging. Is that exempted in here?
Madam Chair, Representative Girod, the timber industry itself usually uses radios. The second thing that comes into play here, if they're on a private road, they can do anything they want. We're talking about public roads.
Well, this is Forest Service. Excuse me. The Forest Service roads are often one-lane roads when they're doing their harvest.
Madam Chair, I believe that and Representative Girod, I mean Senator Girod, sorry, he and I serve in the House together.
So, she can't get by the Girod. I have fun with this one, aren't you?
Yeah, we had a lot of fun together. But actually, if you think about it, that would come under the scope of employment as well.
Senator George?
You were talking about the Nextel exemption, which I think is found on page 2, lines 5 and 6. How does that work? So if you're using Nextel where you're doing one-way communications, that's exempt from the law?
Madam Chair, Senator George, that's correct. And the reason being is because it'd be similar to a CB where you do not dial, you don't have to necessarily do fingering that. The only thing you do is you touch a button and it's a receive and a transmittal. We did take that into account.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. And I also want to let the committee know that there's written testimony from Senator Dingfelder in support of House Bill 2377. You should have that here at the dais. She couldn't be here today. So thank you very much for your testimony. Senator Morissette, do you have a couple of people or somebody you would like to have join you for
Bonnie
your testimony?
Bonnie Altris and Jim Darrell.
Okay. Come on up.
Madam Chair, Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6. My interest in the, what I'll refer to as the ham radio operators, is the committee that I served on last session, the joint committee, and I believe Senator George was on that joint committee dealing with emergency preparedness. We spent a lot of time talking about interoperability of communications and how we can better deal with emergency situations, and I kept saying, well, when are we going to talk to the ham radio operators? When are we going to hear from them? Well, it wasn't until the very last meeting when we had the ham operators come in, and we learned a lot about their emergency response when all of the lines of communications are down. In fact, Senator Johnson mentioned one time that when that heavy windstorm and up in the northern part of the coast was knocking down trees and so on, the only way she could get through was the ham operators. Now, the ham operators are, I guess, I don't think they're adequately dealt with in this bill in terms of, well, you can do that during an emergency. Unless they have that equipment up and going all the time in their vehicles, then it doesn't do any good when an emergency comes and they don't have the equipment that they need. They have been doing this for years. I think there's a difference between cell phone talking and I'll let them get into this because I don't do ham operating. The only thing I don't think they should be doing is the Morse code when they're driving. That's texting, right?
Thank you, Senator. I'm looking forward to being enlightened on this because I'm trying to envision what it's like to be talking on a ham radio in a car. So I'm looking forward to being
they're the experts, and I will leave that up to them. But anyway, I just feel very strongly that they should be allowed to continue what they're doing. It's aside from, there are some similarities. Somebody was telling me about a policeman driving up the highway, zigzagging, talking on his instrument. And it's we can't exempt everybody, but I think the ham operators, need to be considered because of the importance that they have during the emergency management. I have a -8 amendment, and there's a -11 amendment. I'm not sure which one they prefer.
Senator, we also have a -12 amendment that we're considering. The -12 amendment, it's my understanding, and I'm going to let my committee administrator explain when she gets back up here. The -12, it's my understanding, and she can clarify this, that the -12 amendment incorporates at least the -8 amendment, plus it has an additional exemption for addressing the situation of devices that are like walkie-talkies that are used particularly on hood-to-coast relay, for example. And I'll let Lori explain the -12.
That's correct, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Morissette. The -12 amendment stated May 13th include the -8 amendment references to a person who operates a two-way radio device that transmits radio communication, which I believe includes ham radio operators. It also has a provision, Section I, that reads to a person who holds a valid amateur radio operator license issued or any other license issued by the Federal Communications Commission and is operating an amateur radio, and that was the provision, Madam Chair, that specifically deals with the walkie-talkies and the hood-to-coast relay situation.
Thank you. And if you'll start with your name, please. I don't know who's going first.
My name is James Darrow. My call sign is KI7AY. You have my testimony in front of you. And before I get started, I want to say how much I appreciate being able to talk to you folks, especially Madam Chairman. And I'd like to also give kudos to your staff. I've spoken to I've spoken to a guy named John in your office on a couple of occasions. Very impressed.
I will pass that along to him. I appreciate that. And if I could ask you, and I'll say this for anybody here who's here to testify, if you have written testimony, we will read it, and it's better if you just summarize it and speak from the heart.
That is my intention, ma'am.
Terrific.
The only reason I brought it with me is for nerves.
Well, we won't bite.
I've heard that before. The thing I'd like to say is I represent several hundred amateur radio operators in Lane County in that area, and I've been doing a lot of work talking to different people. I'm sure your staff has received a lot of phone calls and hopefully a lot of emails, and some of them are my fault, and I'll take the blame for that. But I don't know otherwise how to get the point across that we do not think we should be included in the cell phone bill. With respect to Representative Tomei and Representative Escobar, we understand that there's a problem with cell phones. It's nationwide, and we understand what the House is trying to do. But what I'd like to bring to your attention is if you listen to the 34-minute excerpt that I will provide on a DVD for you when you have time, that's what they talk about cell phones continuously throughout the excerpt. But in the bill itself, there's no mention of cell phones. And the bill is written so broadly that if it were to pass today, it would make it unlawful for amateur radio operators, citizen band operators, truckers, UCB, family radio service, and a host of other radio operators. Now, your question about what the difference is when you use an amateur radio or any of the other radios, you hold a microphone to your mouth and you talk and you let go of the microphone and you listen. It's two-way communications, but it's not what we considered full duplex. I'm sure that you will all agree that if you're using a telephone and somebody hangs up on you, it's kind of rude. In my opinion, that extends to cell phones as well. If somebody's talking to you on a cell phone, they can interrupt you at any time or be in part of the conversation. If they were to say, "I got to go," and hang up the phone, it would be a rude thing to do. People tend not to do that. And so there's a big difference in that respect. And ham radio operators in particular, when we're talking, we're very polite with each other. We do a lot of listening. We do a lot of listening. In fact, you hear on the air a lot of times, from me included, that I got to put the mic down, I'm in traffic. When we see something bad, we stop. Stop talking. Put the mic down. Keep our hands on the wheel. We predate cell phones by several decades. Madam Chairman, we've been doing this for an awful long time. We're required to take a test. We're licensed. We don't believe we should fit into this category.
So can I just get a question?
Yes, ma'am.
So you hold the button down to speak. You release it to listen.
Yes, ma'am.
And is this something that's connected the entire time that you're driving, or do you turn it on and off?
You mean the radio itself?
Right.
Radio stays on just like your car radio. So, but you do listening most of the time. It's a radio. It'd be just like you had an AM radio in your car, or FM radio, and you could push a button and talk to the broadcaster when he stopped talking.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just want to make sure
fine.
I understand how this is working.
I'm happy to answer any questions you have, ma'am. The other thing I'd like to bring to your attention, which Senator Morissette mentioned a minute ago. I'm sorry, I've known him for 15 years. Sometimes I slip up. Is that mobile operators, generally we do talk on the radio. I commute 60 miles each way to work. I've been doing that for 20 years, and I've been talking on the radio for 20 years. I have yet to have any accident, even a near accident, but I have a lot of times that I reported things that I saw. Now, if it becomes unlawful or very restrictive for amateur radio operators to use their radios mobile, they won't buy the radios. That's going to take away a lot of infrastructure. There are many places in this state where cell phones do not work. But I have never in my career as an amateur radio operator been in an area in this state or any other state that I couldn't get a hold of someone on my radio. I think we're losing a lot of infrastructure. And I also believe that if a police officer, which my wife, who's sitting in the back room, is a retired police officer, has to make the determination whether it's a ham radio operator or any other radio operator is in an emergency situation or something like that, they're going to be more likely to give them a ticket, and they're going to tie up the court system with another ticket. We're going to have to go see the judge if we can find the time off. That's the problem I have with it, ma'am. Like I said, several states have cell phone laws. None's been exempt. They've all exempted amateur radio as far as I know. And that's about all I have to say, ma'am. I mean,
do you have any idea how many radio operators there are in the state of Oregon who have these
mobile radios
in their car? I think I've heard from just about all of them in the last week or so. I could probably count my email to the answer.
A lot of them, yeah.
do you have any idea how many there are?
I would be guessing, and I'd rather not do that. Maybe Bonnie can do that. Do you know how many, Bonnie, mobile operators, roughly?
Not mobile, but there's approximately 19,000 licensed operators in the state.
And Bonnie and I are both members of the Amateur Radio Relay League, which represents over 250,000 hams across the United States. A lot of them are mobile. There's a lot of interesting things that are going on, but I'm sure you don't have time to hear all those. But I'd be happy to tell you at another time if you'd like to hear about it.
Thank you for your testimony.
Yes, ma'am.
You want to go ahead, and if you start with your name, please.
My name's Bonnie Altus. I'm interested specifically in the Amendment I to exempt those with a valid amateur radio license. Madam Chair and members of the committee, you've got my testimony on the ARL letterhead, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'll just highlight a few things here. I'm the elected section manager, a volunteer elected position, representing the Oregon amateur radio operators across the state. Those who are members of the ARL in the state elected me. And it's a volunteer position, so I've got a real job, too, to go along with it. And the things that I specifically would like to highlight is that the representative earlier mentioned the burden of proof would be on the operator. And as currently written, there's no explicit exemption for two-way amateur radio communications by FCC licenses. And we've had discussions with some local police officers that lead us to conclude that they would issue a citation without determining whether the content of the conversation was covered or not. That means that we as volunteers would have to take off work in order to contest the citation. And many of us, because of that limitation of not necessarily being interested in taking off work for something like that, would simply not use our radios. At the very least, we would disconnect our microphones. We may be less likely to install a mobile radio in our vehicles when we purchase a new one, because we don't want that burden of proof. And another thing I would like to highlight is the many other states that have had a cell phone legislation. In fact, cell phones themselves, I'm not opposed to having a bill like that. I very rarely use my cell phone when I drive anyway, and so that legislation would have virtually no effect on me. It's amateur radio that I'm concerned about. And our neighboring state, Washington, passed a bill in 2007 that was very similar to ours, and they specifically exempted amateur radio operations in their bill. And in the last paragraph of my testimony, I would also like to highlight the fact that we're volunteers. Many government agencies, served agencies, such as the American Red Cross and Salvation Army, include amateur radio in their disaster plans, and they cannot pay for nor replace the emergency and public service communications that we provide. And like I said, many of us would, at the very least, disconnect our microphones so that we avoid the risk of a citation and possibly just not install a radio in our vehicles, and therefore that resource would be much less available when it's needed for events like Hood to Coast, which uses it very extensively mobile, Cycle Oregon, Portland Marathon, as well as disaster preparedness agencies. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I wanted to ask, what does it take to get set up with one of these in a car? And what I want to find out is if, for example, there's somebody who really likes to talk while they're driving and this bill passes, are they just going to say, well, I can't use my cell phone, so I'm just going to go put a radio in my car because I can use that? Do you anticipate that would happen?
They have to, for the amateur radios, they would have to take a written exam that involves electronics, radio propagation, and a variety of topics like that, antenna propagation and so on, in order to obtain a ham radio license before they could legally transmit on the amateur radio frequencies.
Mm-hmm. Senator Gerard.
Well, I'd just like to bring up the conversation is not private. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's listening to the
anybody
frequency.
Anybody who listens to that band can hear your
that
conversation.
That excludes all the teenagers. Yes, go ahead.
Along with what Bonnie's saying, they would have to talk to us because their friends aren't going to be on the ham radio. They can go buy a radio, but they're not going to be able to talk to the people they could talk to because unless they have an amateur radio, and they're not going to be able to talk to them.
Understood. Any questions? Further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you for your time.
And then in the next panel, I would like to have Dr. Katrina Hedberg, Craig Campbell, and Sandra Bishop, please. Welcome. Who's going first? Dr. Hedberg?
Yes. Chair Bonamici and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg. I'm the interim state epidemiologist with the Department of Human Services, and I'm here to provide testimony in support of House Bill 2377, which would prohibit the use of cell phones, essentially, and texting are the pieces that we're concerned about. And I think you have my written testimony that I've passed out here. One of the reasons that I wanted to testify before you today really has to do with the public health impact of using cell phones. Motor vehicle crashes are a significant public health problem in Oregon. Every year there's 500 people who die from motor vehicle crashes, and there's around 2,300 hospitalizations at a cost of $86 million. The hospitalization and death rates are highest among young adults aged 15 to 24 years for both motor vehicle crash hospitalization as well as death. As has been mentioned already, cell phone use while driving really poses cognitive impairment. People have a very hard time concentrating, and people have talked about it being akin to being drunk while driving. In addition, there have been studies that have shown that cell phone use while driving increased the risk of crash by fourfold. So it really is not just in theory people can't concentrate, but while on the road, they also can't. It does contribute to crashes. There was an analysis that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration did where they observed people while driving and found that at any given time about 5% of drivers were using handheld cell phones, and that was particularly high, I think has already been mentioned, among young adults aged 16 to 24, which is the same group that is at highest risk for being in crashes. So that pretty much sums up the testimony about why we're in support of this particular bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll hear from the panel and then take questions.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of General Motors, Associated Oregon Loggers, AAA, regarding their tow truck operations, and the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police as it relates to the use of cell phones by off-duty police officers who are not in an emergency vehicle. What I would like to briefly go over with you is the amendments that were put in the bill on the House side that address exceptions to the use of the cell phone. They're fairly narrow, except for the areas, for instance, if you happen to be operating a vehicle within the scope of your employment and that vehicle is part of your employment. For instance, if you're operating a tow truck, if you're operating a semi-truck doing heavy haul, if you're operating a utility vehicle and you're working on down power lines and things like that, that exception is specifically put into the bill, and it also goes to the question that Senator Girard had asked earlier about whether or not this covers those who are dealing with logging operations, because as long as you are operating within the scope of your work and the vehicle you're operating, which in this case would be a log truck or some sort of a logging equipment vehicle, you're taken care of under the exemptions within the bill. There's an exemption for a person operating a motor vehicle while in the scope of their duties as a public safety officer. Oftentimes our chiefs of police get phone calls very early in the morning. They don't have their police unit, and so they don't fall under the exemption for operating an emergency vehicle, but they still are called upon to communicate with people in the field, and often that's done by their cell phones, so it gives an exemption for those folks. There's a question that Senator Girard had asked about Nextel. Unfortunately, the location that he was looking to is not actually the Nextel provision. That is what is currently Section I, and if you adopt the Dash 12 amendments, I believe will be Section K. And that talks about what one of the previous testifiers talked about. There's full duplex and there's half duplex. Half duplex is when you press the button, you speak, you can't hear what's going on. You release the button, and then you can hear the response. That's a half duplex device. That's the way Nextel phones have that function. And so there are some people who provide elderly and disabled transport who use the Nextel as their communication and dispatch device, and that's why that exception was put in the bill. The section that was directed to Senator George actually was the provision that General Motors asked to be put in the bill, and it merely allows you to reach out your finger and press your OnStar button, or if you happen to be using an earpiece, you press the earpiece button so you can receive the phone. So those exceptions, I thought it was probably a good idea for somebody to come up and at least explain what the work group in the House section had discussed. Beyond that, we're supportive of the bill. So
thank you so much. And I assume that if you're using something that's not a GM, you can push the analogous button that's not
Madam
OnStar.
Chair,
but
absolutely.
Good job for your client getting
yes.
that in there, that brand name in there. Sandra?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Bonici and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to address the committee this afternoon. For the record, my name is Sandra Bishop. I'm here representing the Driving School Association of Oregon. The Driving School Association of Oregon is here to support House Bill 2377, the ban on using handheld devices, cell phones specifically, while driving. There are between 20 and 30 commercial driving schools operating in Oregon under the Department of Motor Vehicles certification, and about 30% of the teens who take driver's education in Oregon take those courses from commercial driving schools. One of the concerns we have with the current law is that you're imposing a different standard on young drivers by saying that it's not safe for them to use a cell phone while driving, while allowing older drivers to use cell phones and other handheld devices. There are many other states and jurisdictions that prohibit cell phone use while driving. It's certainly reasonable and timely for Oregon to do the same. We hope you'll see clear to support passage of the bill to improve highway safety in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions, Senator Rosenbaum?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is for Dr. Hedberg. And reading your testimony, and I don't know, I was out of the room for a little while, so I don't know if this came up in response to the first panel, but it would seem that you're saying that it's equally dangerous to be on a cell phone
whether you're using a hands-free device or just talking with the phone to your ear.
Senator Bonamici and I'm Chair Bonamici and Senator Rosenbaum, thank you for the question. In fact, there have been studies that have shown that any type of driving, including the hands-free, is a distraction. I think one of the things about cell phones while driving is that it's relatively new, and so a lot of hard data, that was mentioned earlier, hard data on how many people are talking on what type of device while driving, those data aren't clear, but it does appear that distracted driving is what is leading to a lot of these motor vehicle crashes.
And a follow-up, Madam Chair. So in the states that have, I know New York quite a while ago, I think, prohibited talking on a phone without a hands-free. Is there evidence now that the accident rates have gone down in those states?
Chair Bonamici and Senator Rosenbaum, again, that's one of those things where we'd like to see data for a longer period of time to see that. There are a number of other issues that come up. One has to do with the level of enforcement. So you pass a law, and there will be people who will follow the law because it's the law, and there are also people who will follow the law if they know that they're going to get a ticket or they're, if you will. So, again, I don't know that we have long-term data to answer your question specifically. My feeling is that these laws will do best if they are enforced, but again, then there becomes a larger issue around fiscal, etc. So I think the law in and of itself does help. Again, enforcement helps it even further.
Thank you.
Do you have a question, Senator?
Yeah, I'd like to kind of follow up on her line of questioning, and that is, it seems to me like you brought up texting, and if I was trying to text, being the older duffer that I am and trying to hit the right buttons, that would be, I can understand, I'd be all over the road. Trying to go through my directory to make a phone call, I would see that as being distractive, but receiving a call, it's just kind of boom, boom, and it's up. It seems like there'd be a world of difference between receiving a phone call and texting, and I just, does the data show anything different in those regards, or?
So, go ahead.
Senator Bonamici, Senator Garrard. The driver school instructors actually have an exercise that they use, and it has to do with how holding something up to the side of your head affects your peripheral vision. It has a profound effect. You're severely limiting your range of sight and awareness on the road. It's quite dangerous to have something held up to your head.
Chair Bonamici and Senator Garrard, to address this, I actually brought some of the studies with me, and I'd be happy if you'd like. I can email those out to the committee as well. There have been two types of studies that have been done. There have been some that are, as I mentioned, observational studies where they look and laws that have been implemented. There's also the University of Utah has simulated driving where they're doing it under a variety of conditions, including giving, if you will, volunteers something to drink, see how they react. And then also the use of these different devices, and that's where you get some of the data that show that that this lack of concentration that you get from cell phone use. So the specific thing, I would agree that holding something to your ear, having to look, is an additional distraction, but what they've seen in some of the studies from the University of Utah is that it is also distracting. For whatever reason, it's less distracting to talk to someone who's next to you in the car, to talk to someone who is on the other end of a cell phone, if you will, regardless of whether you're holding it with your hand or whether it's hands-free.
Thank you for your testimony. Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And next I'm going to call another panel, and I am going to ask you, it looks like there's a lot of people here with probably the same thing in mind, so I'm going to ask you to come up together, and if you could keep your testimony brief. Mr. Simmons, Douglas Simmons, Carl Somdahl, and Dan Bathurst, please. Bathurst, sorry. And if you could summarize your testimony, that would be terrific.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Doug Simmons. I am the Marion County Amateur Radio Emergency Services coordinator for operations. We provide emergency communications for many of the county operations when we have an emergency. It's understood that we can operate our radios in an emergency situation. One of the ways that we become comfortable with this is by the casual communications that we have with our mobile units. I am very deeply concerned with being able to run an operation out of emergency operations centers, but this comes by casual use, understanding your radios, being familiar with them, and we do that on a daily basis. We understand and we support not using cell phones while traveling. That's a foregone conclusion. However, when you take your mind off your driving and you use your cell phones, you are distracted because you have several multiple functions that you have to function with that cell phone. In mobile amateur radio operation, you have one finger or one thumb, one button, and your eyes and concentration is never taken off the road. If there is a situation where traffic becomes heavy, you will always hear the amateur radio operators excuse themselves from transmitting and be silent. Not in the history of me being an amateur radio operator have I ever heard of an accident caused by an amateur radio operator operating the one button on a microphone. We provide an excellent service, I believe. It was mentioned that in 2007, the windstorms, that was on the northwest Oregon coast. The reason we were able to accomplish that communication, which was the sole and only communication that the governor had, was by amateur radio operators who were comfortable with their mobile units, working through emergency operations centers to the Oregon Emergency Management. It occurred again not long after that when we had the snowstorms up in the Detroit area, where the Marion County ARES provided communications for county people up there to provide emergency communications. All this came about because we had a comfortability with the equipment that we had. We could operate our radios without looking from the roadway or from the situation that was causing an emergency, and just using the one button on the one microphone with one finger or one thumb.
Thank you. And Mr. Simmons, I'm going to ask you to summarize your testimony. We still have other people to testify and more bills to do today. So if there's some concluding remarks you'd like to make, that would be great. Thank you.
Our future is that we are facing possibilities of earthquakes, and they're not ifs, they are whens, and we have to be prepared. And how we're going to be prepared is by our practiced use of amateur radios, especially in mobile units. Without this exemption for the amateur radio operators to use the amateur radios in their vehicles, we will be putting the citizenry of the state of Oregon in a tremendous hazard to life and limb if we are restricted from the use of amateur radios in the vehicles. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. And if you want to go ahead and state your name first, and if you have additional comments to make, that would be helpful. If you're going to say the same thing that's been said by other witnesses, if you could just let us know that you agree, that would be helpful, too, because we have other people to testify.
Yes, I basically agree with Doug and
can you say your name first, please?
With Bonnie Aldis. My name is Dan Bathurst, and I run a local repeater, which is part of a portion of what ham radio is doing, and in operating my service vehicle for my large corporation, the company looked at ham radio, and I told them I've got to have this in order to operate my system. My system aids in emergency, and by the way, it got me a tow truck a while back when nobody else could do it. Well, the company looked at it and decided, well, we got to ban CBs, but, you know, ham radio is necessary. So they let me install a very nice mobile system in my service vehicle, recognizing that that was more important than even cell phones. Cell phones are banned in our company rig while we're in motion. If a boss calls us and gets us on the phone, we are required to immediately find a place to pull over and talk to them at that point. And they've waited 5 minutes for me at times. But with ham radio, they've made no restrictions on that whatsoever. And there have been some emergencies recently in which my company actually allowed me time off to go take care of the emergency. So they feel it's that important. Without ham radio, without the provision that we're asking for exempting ham radio, my system will be shut down. There's no way we can operate without mobiles.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and fellow senators, I'm Carl Sumdahl from Pacific City. Also got the nerves here. We can talk on our mics, but we get to a Senate committee and things change. I've been in ham radio for 60 years. 59 of those I've been driving. In all that time, from Wisconsin to California to Oregon, I have not witnessed or seen an amateur radio operator or heard of one either issued a citation for erratic driving or being involved in an accident. I believe the amateur radio installation in a car is very, very different from what the cell is. We don't operate the cell phone in our own home when we're in our, in our car, as opposed to maybe a passenger. I'm also a volunteer exam coordinator, a manager for the ham radio exams in Lincoln City, Oregon. I have 12 people reporting to me. The question came up about the ham exams a few minutes ago. They're a fairly complex exam. Just to enter the hobby, there's 350 questions or more in the pool, and 35 are randomly picked and administered. So somebody with a citizen or with a cell phone background that thinks, you know, I'm going to pick up a ham ticket and get myself back on the air, I don't see that as going forward at all. I'm involved with emergency services in Tillamook and Lincoln County. My reporting locations are the 911 center at both counties. If amateur radio were to be included in this bill as it's currently written and hams begin to remove equipment or repeater owners like myself begin to say it's a liability to have our repeaters, I own two very wide-ranging repeaters on Mount Hebo that were extremely instrumental in the 07 storm. And I'm here to strongly encourage you to add the amendment outlined in Section I so that amateur radio operators with an FCC license are excluded from this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. And next, Peggy Tucker, please. I'm sorry to keep you waiting so long. Did you want to come up by yourself, or do you want Sarah to come with you? Come on. She can do an encore performance.
It won't take very long.
Chair Bonamici and members of the committee, my name is Peggy Tucker, and I reside in Canby, Oregon. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 2377. This bill is very personal to me. I've seen firsthand what happens when people talk on cell phones while driving, and I'd like to share my story with you. This is how it happened. A 19-year-old dropped her cell phone, tried to pick it up, lost control, sideswiped another car. That car went across the center line, struck an SUV with four people in it. The SUV was returning home from church with my daughter, my son-in-law, and my two grandkids in the back seat. All of them had seat belts on. The van came across the center median, went airborne, and hit my daughter's car head on. My daughter was killed 1 year and 6 months ago today. My grandson and my son-in-law were taken to ICU with internal injuries, all because of a cell phone. I am begging parents, and young adults to be advised of the dangers of cell phones while driving. Studies have shown that drivers take their eyes off the road while using a cell phone for 30 seconds. House Bill 2377 addresses these dangerous practice, and I believe that it will truly save lives and raise awareness. I hope and pray that no family will have to share the experience that I am living with. By sharing my story, I hope I can help one person. This bill will help many. I want to thank the committee for hearing this bill and strongly urge the committee to move this bill forward with a due pass recommendation to the Senate floor. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I'm so sorry for your loss, and I know how difficult it must be for you to talk about it, but we really appreciate your coming forward.
Thank you very much.
Any questions for Mrs. Tucker? Thank you again.
Mm-hmm.
I have one more panel to come up. Mike Magnuson, Tyler Parsons, and Kevin Hunt, please. And again, if you're here to agree with testimony that's already been presented, if you could just let us know that, and if there's something new to add, that's appropriate. But if you could try to summarize and just let us know if you agree with prior testimony. I think a lot of you are here on the same issue, so go ahead and start.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Senators. My name is Mike Magnuson. I'm an amateur radio operator, and I'm also the president of the local club in Gresham, the View Amateur Radio Club. We are in favor of the cell phone bill, but we are concerned with some of the wording, not excluding amateur radio operators. The Oregon Emergency Management has stated in one of their documents that they depend on and rely on amateur radio operators. Also, they list us as a secondary backup for all communications and all emergencies. Excuse me. But nowhere in their document does it state that there is a difference between mobile and fixed. So, and most of our emergency cooperation with emergency management is mobile. We also provide services for parades and everything else voluntary that would cause hardship to those organizations to where they would have to hire communications personnel. Some of this would also include mobile communications. So I do urge you that to accept and into the bill the modification for the amendment.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tyler Parsons. I'm licensed as WB7DDL, and I'm here on my own behalf. I'm not associated with any particular local organization. I am a member of the American Radio Relay League. I'm sympathetic to the hands-free portion of this bill, which does not specifically address cell phones, and support it. In my research and trying to find alternatives for a hands-free system, I found that there were very few manufacturers of radios that produce hands-free equipment. There are very, very few of them. There is one company that does produce a headset, but it still requires a mechanism to activate and deactivate it. And you still have a headset that covers one ear in one particular case completely. In the other case, it's a lighter weight one, but it's very fragile. There is, I found, one Bluetooth manufacturer in England who is producing hands-free equipment for ham radios, but it's relatively expensive. In my case, it's about 1.5 times the cost of the radio, and still requires a hand to operate the system. I believe Washington, I know, and I believe California already has an exemption for amateur radio operators. The current wording of the bill would discourage hams from operating in emergency situations, since they would not already have their radios installed. If this bill passes as it is written, I would be removing my radios from my vehicles. I ask you to support the amendment exempting hams and CB operators. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Hunt?
Thank you. My name is Kevin Hunt. I've practiced constitutional law here in Oregon for about 25 years. I'm admitted before the United States Supreme Court. I'm a ham radio operator, have been since I was age 15. I'm also a wilderness first responder, a search and rescue volunteer, and a member of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. I have right here an example of an amateur radio. And as you can see, it's a very unobtrusive device, a mobile unit like this, and it installs out of the way. This is how you communicate. Roger, Jim, yeah, they're right ahead. Over. Okay, that was it. Okay, now everything is coming out of this speaker, which is down mounted out of the way, and that's it. It takes far less time and is far less distracting, and has your hand off the wheel far less time than does operating a manual transmission. So if we're concerned about this being dangerous, I suggest that you outlaw manual transmissions, because they obviously are more of a menace. Now, I want to address some of the legal issues here, because nobody has done that yet. The amateur radio service is regulated under the Communications Act by Congress and under Title 47, Part 97 of the Code of Federal Regulations. Federal preemption applies here. I don't think anyone has pointed that out to you yet. I know I have in my emails, but I want to give you an example of what has happened in a very closely related area. Several years ago, a number of states thought it'd be a good idea to pass laws outlawing having police scanners in vehicles, because they felt criminals could use them to evade the police, people could avoid speed traps, and the like. The problem is that a number of amateur radios such as this, because of the way they're designed, they also cover the frequencies which are used by the police and fire services. Additionally, it's part of federal policy that radio amateurs be able to monitor those frequencies. The FCC stepped in, and all of those laws were struck down. They were declared preempted. The courts have upheld that. In fact, in the nearly 100 years that the Commerce Clause has been invoked by the United States Congress to completely preempt the field of radio communications, there has not been a single federal decision that has failed to uphold the federal preemption. Secondly, the federal policy in favor of mobile amateur radio operation has been embraced by most states. That's why you see these yellow license plates that have ham radio call signs on them. It's to encourage amateur radio operators to put radios in their cars. Now, somebody asked about some statistics. I want to point out that the statistics in this area are not very robust. We've heard about study, study, study. There's really been only one main study, and that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. It did say it appears that using or not using a handheld or device, or hands-free device, probably wouldn't make any difference. But in any event, I do have some statistics here. And these are kind of old for a good reason.
Mr. Hunt, yes, you need to sit there because we're taping this.
Okay.
And if you walk away, we won't get your voice.
I apologize.
It's not the same as a courtroom.
All right, that's fine.
You may not approach the bench.
All right, most of these bills do not require the compilation of statistics, which is kind of odd. I would suggest that if we want to know whether ham radio operators are causing accidents, that maybe in this bill we could ask that when police file their accident reports, they do what they've done in these states I'm going to show you, and they try to categorize the causes of accidents. But I'll show you just briefly what I do have here. Minnesota, Oklahoma, Michigan, Florida, California, and Pennsylvania. We have total crashes along the top. Minnesota over almost 95,000, Oklahoma 77,000, Michigan 580,000, Florida 102,000, California 491,000, Pennsylvania 147,000. Now, the next line is cell phone crashes. These are crashes in which a cell phone was deemed to contribute. Out of 94,969 in Minnesota, 223. Out of the 77,000 in Oklahoma, 134. Out of the 580,000 in Michigan, 822. Out of the 102,000 in Florida, 140. Out of the 490,000 in California, 611. And out of the 150,000 approximately in Pennsylvania, 139. For roughly, 0.2%, 0.17%, 0.14%, 0.13%, 0.12%, and 0.09%. Now, we have some more recent figures than that from the state of Washington, but these are still all 2003. That's because when Washington first approached this issue, they had the foresight to ask the state police up there to try to gather these statistics. And what we show is the crashes total were 127,830. There were 67,633 injuries. There were 655 fatalities. Of those, now I'm just talking about cell phones now, out of that total of 128,000 crashes, cell phones were involved in 593. Of the 67,000 that resulted in injuries, 348 involved cell phones. Of the accidents that were disabling, 10 involved cell phones. Of those, the 655 that were fatal, zero. Now, nonetheless, I think this bill is very well taken, and it's something we all know anecdotally. We've all experienced this. But the fact is, what do you not have any evidence of? What do you have zero evidence of? Not a scintilla of evidence. This committee has not a scintilla of evidence that operating an amateur radio has ever caused a single accident.
Hey, Mr. Hunt, I'm going to ask you to wrap up because we have a representative here to speak on another bill and several other bills
to
speak to today.
Let me wrap up with this rather simplistic graphic. However, I think it states my case fairly well. Here I have a scale. On the right side, on this right side of the scale, I have lives lost in accidents by mobile radio amateurs. Zero. So that side of the scale is way up. On the left side, the scale's slamming down on the table. This is the lives saved because of mobile amateur radio operators. More than hundreds every year in Oregon. And the question was asked, how many hams are there in Oregon? There's 19,181, and the average age is upper 50s. And so literally lives are in the balance. If you want to have fatalities, if you want to create a problem where we did not have one before, don't amend the bill. But I have one more thing to say. It's not been said yet. I'm going to say to you that simply exempting licensed amateur radio operators, that language is insufficient. This is why. How is a police officer on the road who sees me picking up this microphone going to know whether I possess an amateur radio license? He's going to have to stop me and ask me to produce it. Once I do that, then, you know, if I have it and I produce it, fine, I don't get ticketed. But how's he going to know whether I'm a ham or not? How's he going to know whether that's a business radio, CB radio, or what it is? He's going to have to stop me. And as soon as local police are able to stop ham radio operators, you have crossed the line into intruding into federal preemption, and this violates the Commerce Clause and the Supremacy Clause, and this is going to end up in a lot of litigation when it's not necessary because we want to support the state of Oregon and we want to support public safety. And the last thing we want to do is be involved in that. I want to ask you to adopt any of these amendments that will exempt us, but please consider language that will simply take two-way radios out of this bill entirely. Because otherwise we're just chipping away, we're filling the bill up with a whole lot of skeletal language that's going to require the police to pull people over to figure out what's going on. I appreciate the candor of the representative who said the burden goes to us. As soon as the burden goes on an amateur radio operator to go into court and prove he was conducting emergency communications, once again, ladies and gentlemen, you have crossed the constitutional line. Because federal policy doesn't allow us to only engage in emergency communications. This is my last point. This is the point, really, ultimately, I wanted to make today. The state of Oregon has no authority to regulate the content of amateur radio communications. That is solely a function of the Federal Communications Commission.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you very much.
I assure you we're not trying to regulate content. Any questions for this panel recently? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Madam Chairman, my point is that it would be regulating content if we have to prove that the content we were communicating was public service or emergency rather than just talking.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2377 and open a work session on House Bill 2377.
Madam Chair, I move the -12 amendments to House Bill 2377 to be engrossed. Amendments dated May 13th, 2009.
Senator George moves the -12 amendments to House Bill 2377. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 12 amendments are adopted to House Bill 2377. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2377, and I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2578. Representative Riley, sorry to keep you waiting. Come on. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2578 in gross requires a tower to contact parking facility owner or owner's agent prior to the tow. It allows the tower with certain restrictions to monitor a parking facility.
I need to have quiet, please, because we're starting another bill. Sorry, Representative Riley.
Requires photographic evidence of a properly parked vehicle. It creates some exceptions to the towing restrictions for vehicles constituting a safety hazard, blocking access, or without a parking tag in a residential lot with fewer parking spaces than units. It requires a tower to release a vehicle without charge if the owner is present at the time of tow or if hookup is complete for a fee that does not exceed hookup charge. And it requires a landlord to post rules, restrictions, or limitations in a designated guest parking space. There are Dash 3 amendments before you, and those Dash 3 amendments specify a time for certain notifications, and it allows towing if the vehicle is violating a prominently posted parking prohibition. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Thank you very much. Representative Riley, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. For the record, State Representative Chuck Riley representing Hillsborough, Corners, and Forest Grove. The bill you have before you is, as Lori has pointed out, and it has been worked very diligently with a work session with all the stakeholders, including the Building Owners and Managers Association, the Towing Association, and the Residential Building Association, the people who run apartments and complexes, and some concerned citizens. And we came out with a consensus bill. All parties agreed that this bill is a good bill. We'll solve the problems that we think exist. And you have in front of you the A3 amendment, which I would like you to adopt. I think this is something that we wanted to put in but didn't have time, and hope that you would do so. I'm not going to go through a lot of testimony. The hour is late, and I'm here to answer questions if you have questions.
I see Representative Demra is here, too. Would you like to join Representative Riley? And
sure, thank you.
Are there questions for Representative? Are you able to stay while Representative... Okay, Representative Demra, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. I'm Michael Dembro, State Representative for District 45. That's Northeast Portland to Park Rose. And I'm here to support Representative Riley in support of House Bill 2578. I want to acknowledge the leadership and hard work that Representative Riley and his staff did in helping to generate this bill and also working it through to a point where I think there's a lot of consensus around it. I was first brought to this issue actually by a former student of mine who had a very unfortunate experience where she, a family member, called her, was in some medical distress, and she raced over in her car to deal with this family member, parked her car, and there was apparently some problem with the way that she parked, what happened was she parked in, it was in a parking, an apartment complex, she parked in somebody's spot that was not marked visitor, she put a note on her windshield saying, I'm going to be in just for a minute, went in, dealt with the family member, came out and her car was gone. And her assumption was that the car had been stolen. She was very frantic. Meanwhile, she was unable to take the family member to get medical care. It was a very complicated experience and very unfortunate because this is a young woman who was very limited financial means, and the expense of getting her car back was just, it was very hurtful for her. And she wrote about her story in in a paper, which was then shared with the rest of the class. I thought her story seemed a little far-fetched, but a number of students in the class corroborated that something similar had happened to them or other family members. And ever since then, I've been very sensitive to this issue. I believe that where the bill is now, I think it will deal with some of the more egregious problems related to what we call predatory towing. And I urge you to support this bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions along with Representative Riley.
Thank you, Representatives. Any questions for the representatives? No? Thank you for your testimony. I also have Bill Cross and Gary, it looks like Coe. Gary Coe.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Cross, and I'm here on behalf of the Building Owners and Managers Association. I would like to commend Representative Riley for working with the various stakeholders trying to come up with a bill that addresses some of the issues that were already discussed. At the time that the amendments were prepared for the work session on the House side, they got them back from LC, you know, virtually right before the work session, and we discovered that some language was missing on one of the prohibitions on parking in front of loading zones or red curbs or no parking signs. And Representative Riley agreed to submit an amendment to address that. This amendment does so that in commercial parking lots, particularly if the individual leaves their car or parks it in front of a no-loading zone, for example, you would be able to go ahead and have the car towed without notifying the owner with the two-hour notice requirements. So this was important for commercial properties particularly, and we would ask that you adopt these amendments. Thank you.
The dash three amendments?
The dash three amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Gary Coe, and I represent the towing industry. We also appreciate the opportunity to participate in the work sessions, and we also support the bill. Second of all, though, I want to explain to the committee what a private property impound is. That's what this bill deals with. When you have photo radar and red light cameras and police-initiated tows and private property-initiated tows, there's one thing in common, and that is that we have somebody who violated some kind of a rule or law. In fact, I'll say a law. In the case of the public entities, being the red light cameras and the photo radar, there isn't much you can do because there is, and even the police-initiated tows, there's not a lot you can do because it's the government. But in the case of private property, we end up with a lot of complainers. And when I say complainers, one of the things the bill asks us, the industry, to do is to take photos. And we've been, and our company has been taking photos for many years. And the good thing about that is, and we're very supportive of that, because it solves the problem. People come in, say, pound their hand on the fist and say, "Why was my car towed?" "Well, you were parked in a fire lane." "I wasn't parked in a fire lane." We bring the picture up on the camera, on the screen, and pull the screen around for them to take a look at. "Is this your car, sir? How much do I owe you?" It just gets rid of the problem. So we're very supportive of the camera, of the photo requirements. And we generally take multiple photos in relation to the signage, in relation to the red marked fire curb. So I just wanted the committee to understand what private impounds were and their relationship to other violations. But we do support the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2578? We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2578 and open a work session on House Bill 2578. Mr. Vice Chair?
Dash threes.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 2578A, dated April 20th.
Senator George moves to adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 2578. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
The -3 amendments are adopted, and I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2578 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2255A and ask Lori to please summarize House Bill 2255A. And as you're doing that, if John Van Landingham can come forward, that'd be great. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2255A in gross prohibits a manufactured dwelling park nonprofit cooperative from issuing stock in the cooperative. It specifies certain rights and notification requirements for manufactured dwelling lien holders. It limits the number of manufactured dwelling park memberships to the number of dwelling spaces. It prohibits selling a membership for more than the price that was paid. It specifies certain title transfer requirements for the member, the buyer, lien holder. It creates new provisions for lien holders regarding notices and rights to sell and store manufactured homes. It defines a qualified borrower for certain tax credits for financing, construction, development, acquisition, or rehabilitation of a manufactured dwelling park. It mandates a membership for a resident owner if the manufactured dwelling park originated as a nonprofit cooperative. There are -3 amendments that were put forth by the stakeholders that includes lien perfected with the Department of Consumer and Business Services in the lien holder definition. They're also in reference to in doing a conflicts check. Legislative Council indicated that there was a conflicts amendment necessary. So what has happened with Legislative Council, we received these just before the hearing. They took the -3 amendments that the stakeholders had put forward and put the conflicts amendment together with it, and that is the -A4 that you see before you. So it is a proposed amendment that includes the amendment, includes the -3s and the amendments to resolve conflicts that are in reference to House Bill 2261 that is still currently before the legislature.
Thank you, Lori. Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Welcome.
Who's going to go first?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Van Landingham, Lane County Legal Aid and Advocacy Center. This bill continues our 2007 efforts with your adoption of bills in 2007 to promote resident ownership of manufactured home parks as one of the more positive solutions to the park closure issue. The bill was developed in work with Oregon Housing Community Services and at DCBS. I've given you written testimony that describes what's in the bill. Given the hour, I won't walk through that, but I'd be glad to answer questions. The bill passed the House Consumer Protection Committee unanimously, was carried on the floor by Representative Wingard, and passed the House unanimously 58-0. I think we've addressed concerns that some other people had before we got out of the House. The -4 amendments are fine. I've been nervously reading them in the back of the room trying to understand. I think they're fine. They include the one issue that the advocates wanted. The rest of it is the conflict stuff. Be glad to answer questions.
Thank you very much.
Chair Bonamici and members of the committee, I'm Peggy McGuire. I'm the Community Resources Division Administrator at Oregon Housing and Community Services. I've also provided written testimony under my secret alias as Pegged McGuire. So that will explain anything that maybe I omit. And in the interest of time, I'm also going to tighten up my presentation to you. The Manufactured Dwelling Park Community Relations Program is located in the Community Resources Division at Housing and Community Services. Housing and Community Services also assist residents who choose to purchase their park when the park is closing. And so we operate the two programs. This is, as Mr. Van Landingham has said, a bill that we've been working on for a long time with DCBS and with many of the stakeholders involved. And we feel that there's no fiscal impact. We're pleased to be here to encourage you to support this, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Any questions, committee? Senator Girard.
Oh, yeah. Is this part of the work group that you put together, or is this just your own? Did you bring this bill? You know how you had the work group.
Senator Bonnage meets you, Senator Dry. This is not from the Manufactured Housing Landlord Tenant Coalition, although which I facilitate, although I brief them on this bill. This bill is supported by park landlords because we're talking about voluntary sales. There's no forced sale here. What we're trying to do is facilitate residents buying the parks from a willing seller. Is that what you were getting at?
Yeah, then answer questions.
Senator George?
John, my only concern with the bill, and you may be able to answer it, is in page 3, lines 20, basically 7 through about 29 or 31. This has to do with the sale of your membership in a cooperative. And let me run through a scenario for you. I could see a cooperative acquiring a piece of property to maintain it in a park. Over the years, the value of that land becomes incredibly high. So in essence, the cooperative then has a huge amount of money that would then, once it was sold, would be distributed to all of its members. You have a member who, there may be an impending sale sometime in the future saying, hey, we're all going to move out of this park and all become millionaires because we're selling this land. But the person is sick or something and needs to sell their membership before the closing date of the co-op. And this right here would, in essence, say that I could only sell my membership for the price I paid for it. And it seems like to me that there may be some kind of inequity at some point in the future because of that particular line, especially 23 to 24. Tell me if I'm wrong and tell me how that would be dealt with.
Senator Bonamici, Senator George, you are wrong. Two.
It isn't the first time. It won't be the last time. So.
Nor will I. I struggle with this stuff for way longer than it's worth. The first answer is that we're talking about nonprofit co-ops. So while that has happened, the example that you gave, for example, in Florida, a park that was owned by the residents, a co-op, sold itself for $80 million. Actually, they turned down an offer for $80 million, thinking they could get more. The market went south. They missed their opportunity. But we have worried about that opportunity, that possibility. And this is designed to be a nonprofit cooperative. So if the co-op does close and sells, the money has to go to another nonprofit cooperative or to a charity. And one reason for that is that in 07, you authorized the use of the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit, a public subsidy for this. But the bigger reason here why it's limited to the par value is that DCBS told us that they would treat those as securities. A membership in the co-op would then be a security. It would have to be registered. You'd have to hire fancy pants lawyers from Portland. And the affordability of this deal goes south as a result. So the residents can sell their homes, but they can't sell their membership and make money on it. And that was not our goal. Our goal was actually to allow the members to sell their cooperative membership and make some profit on it, which is the New Hampshire model. And that's the cooperative model nationally. You can make money on both. But DCBS said to us, we don't want you to allow people to make money on the shares. They can make money on the homes. The New Hampshire experience is that homes in mobile home parks owned by a co-op appreciate comparably to stick-built homes. So that alone is a significant thing. More than if it were just a regular park.
Yes.
So in the state of Oregon, could somebody set up a for-profit cooperative in a manufactured housing?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Great. Thank you very much.
And if I might add, there are two parks that have been purchased by residents in another model than the one described here.
Thank you very much.
Also formed as nonprofits.
I just want to ask a clarification to something that John said about, is it my understanding that DCBS said we don't want the people to make money, or did they say if it's structured that way, it would be a security, in which case it would have to be handled differently?
Chair Bonamici, since I don't want DCBS calling me tomorrow, yelling at me.
That's what I wanted to clarify. I'm trying to protect you, John.
Their point was that if there was money at stake in the shares, then there's the risk of abuse, and the shares then should be regulated as if there were any other kind of security, and that would bring in DCBS's role in regulating the shares. DCBS, in our negotiations in the interim, DCBS gave us some conditions for the memberships not being treated as a security. In exchange for our agreeing to those, DCBS has exempted the memberships from being treated as a security. They adopted by rule in January of 09. So it's not in the bill. It's by rule that these are not security. So
thank you. Yes, I just wanted to clarify that. Senator Gerard.
Well, that kind of answered most of my question, but I was kind of following up on what Senator George was asking. And it seems to me that if you had you could not make a profit in selling your shares, but on the entity, in order to have something to sell, could go back to each of the individual tenants and say, in order to facilitate this, we'll give you $100,000 to move out. Now, is something like that possible, or am I kind of barking up the wrong tree here?
Madam Chair, Senator Gerard, I want to read the bill. I mean, always, I shouldn't answer that question without reading the bill more closely to see whether there's some potential there.
Okay. I'm just chuckling over.
Any other questions? No? Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2255 and open a work session on House Bill 2255 for the purposes of the A4-4 amendments.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -4 amendments dated May 14th to House Bill 2255A.
Senator George moves to adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 2255A dated May 14th, 2009. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? The -4 amendments are adopted, and I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2255. That will come back after we don't have the fiscal on. I am closing the committee for today. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you. You don't have the fiscal.